Spencer's show. About once a month, Mayor Kat and I have sat down and talked about things that are happening with the city of Struthers and things that you guys are working on and sort of like bring the community in on the conversation. This week, Kat has brought some guests along. So Kat, why don't you introduce your guests?
Well, today with us, we have Kristen Olmey from KO Consulting and Sam Iannucci from KO Consulting. We have, for the last couple months, been in the process of creating our city's first ever comprehensive plan. Now it's something other communities have been doing, have done in the past, but this will be our first time at this. I know I met with some of the administration of Dublin, Ohio, down in Columbus, and when I spoke to them about our first comprehensive plan, they laughed and basically said, we're working on our plan for 2035. Wow. So we need to catch up. We need to get this plan going. We met with council. Everybody was approved of it. I know they've been meeting with a lot of our council members to get input. We're reaching out to as many people as we can, and we're going to be working, starting hopefully soon on our phase two of it. So I will let them explain to you what a comprehensive plan is, because it was hard to sell to someone who may not understand it at first, because it's not something like
comprehensive plan that's hard to comprehend.
Yes.
Interesting.
But it's not something that you can purchase or it's not something tangible that you can have. But
right.
We have to have some kind of vision. We have to know where we're going. But we also have to know where we are, where we've been. Mm-hmm. But we, in order to apply for a lot of the monies that are coming out today, you have to have this plan in place. They won't grant the city's money unless you have some type of vision that we can that you can show them to be able to accept the money. So that was another big factor in there. But I will let Kristen, if you want to take over.
Sure. I'm going to let Samantha do most of the comprehensive plan talking because she's the planner by trade. But I think just a little bit of background that's a little important. You know, I'm a lifelong Struthers resident. So this is not only, you know, obviously there's incredible value for doing a comprehensive plan, but as a resident, just to see like, okay, this is who we are, this is where we are, but this is where we want to go. And you really need to have planning. So my background is more economic development. I was the grants coordinator for the county for the last decade. I left to start a community and economic development firm on our, you know, on my own, and really understanding that if you don't have the plan, it is very difficult to get funding. So from a grant writer standpoint to dealing with getting funds, going to the federal and state government and saying, hey, like, this is where we're at. This is where we want to go. Help us fund this. They're like, well, where's your plan? So what a comprehensive plan is and sort of the blueprint for where we want our city to be and how to get the funding to get there. So in terms of like the planning process and the procedures and how we're reaching out to the community and dealing with community engagement, you know, Samantha and I work in tandem, but she's a urban planner by trade. So a lot of the comprehensive plan, a lot of the footwork she's doing in terms of the planning. And then I'll come in from a funding aspect and a grant application aspect and say, okay, this is how we can get things funded. And we've been very successful already out the gate for the city of Struthers, a couple of nice size grants, one for the wastewater treatment plant, and just announced last week, the Appalachian Regional Commission power planning grant that'll help with some additional specific funding for manufacturing, planning for new green manufacturing. But in terms of the plan, I would certainly at this point turn things over to Samantha to talk about why a plan's important. And her perspective is so valuable because she left, not only did she leave the area, I left the area for a short stint, but I never left the States. Samantha left the United States for a nice period of time and has a lot of travel through Europe. And having that perspective, bringing that perspective into a comprehensive planning process has been really, you know, amazing. I'm learning stuff daily, just even being a part of the process. So, Samantha?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great segue. Yeah, planning, I mean, I can't even begin to express the importance of planning, but as Kristen said, I've been gone for a little while and I was living in Denver. That's where I got my master's in urban planning. And then I lived in Stockholm and in Amsterdam. And so coming back, you know, at the time of COVID. So I came back now, the end of April, 2020. Yeah. I mean, I was like surprised and not surprised to see that most things have stayed the same, right? So And a lot of that, from that perspective, from funding, it's like there's just a lot of federal and state monies that are being implemented or that are being used for projects that don't align within a plan. And if you don't have a plan, you're using money on projects that don't contribute to the identity of a place. And a lot of what's happened around here is there's no planning for quality of life, right? For walkability and bikeability and for good utilization of space to create public places and spaces where people could hang out. And I mean, cities all across the nation and across the globe saw the importance of those kinds of spaces, especially during the pandemic, right? So people, when their normal schedules and their normal routines were disrupted, it's like, you know, you had more people on the streets. And here, it's still a very outdated perspective that streets are here for cars and streets are here for vehicles to move vehicles from point A to point B. So I really want to change the conversation and introduce, they're not new concepts. I mean, they're older than the history of cities, but just introduce concepts that bring people back into the equation. And yeah, I mean, like Mayor Miller and Kristen both said, you know, we need plans for these funding opportunities as well. We're at a point in time that, I mean, it's very advantageous for funding different kinds of projects, whether that be for infrastructure or for placemaking and quality of life, where we have all of these American Recovery Plan funds. So yeah, we need a plan and we need a strategy to fit them into.
Now, do you see a lot of this stuff following trends? Like when you have something that's more on the progressive side that might be a marketing sell to kind of pull the public over to it? Is it easier to have your stuff kind of follow those trends rather than, you know, educate the public?
So
like some of these things, like you have to really plead your case or make your case for getting that funding for things and then lining the public so that they support those endeavors.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it easier to follow those trends is, I guess, my question.
Well, so, I mean, all right, with a lot of concepts that are about placemaking and increasing quality of life, let's use bike lanes, for example, it tends to be very controversial. Like Mary Miller and I were just speaking before this at the Mocha House, and I was just saying, you know, when these kinds of concepts are introduced, they get a lot of resistance. Although a whole community could say how they want to feel and, you know, what they want to experience in their city, and they want like small shops lining the streets and they want to see people walking and biking. But when it comes to any kind of change to the built environment, so for example, like the installation of a bike lane that might narrow a driving lane, it's like you get a lot of resistance there. So it's, you know, even though these quality of life changes and projects are happening all over the world, it is still very controversial in any community. When you're introducing change, there tends to be a lot of resistance. I mean, a lot of times what planners will resort to is what's called tactical urbanism. So applying temporary solutions to a place to help people see what's possible. So you see that a lot, like with this past week, it was parking day. So all across the nation, people will turn a parking spot into a small pocket park. And then you could just begin to demonstrate to the community and to the public what's possible in that space. So it's, I don't know if that exactly answered
your
question.
Sure. Oh yeah. And as mayor here, I mean, you're pretty good at keeping yourself, like you combat things, like you're able to, but you're delicate and you kind of keep everybody still, you know, in the cause. So you have safe plays that don't push on norms, and then you have progressive stuff that kind of bring out some, like she was saying, that so some fight about it. As mayor, how do you strategize? Is it like small steps leading up to it, or
I think it really depends on what is going on. I ran for this position to be able to make those big changes, to be able to do, to make the big splashes, knowing that we were going to have the pushback from some of the residents. I'm okay with that. If I feel at the end of the day that I'm doing what I set out to do and our team is doing what we set out to do, I'm good with it. That's why I was elected. I was elected for that specific reason, to make those changes. But as far as the pushback, you're going to have that regardless of what happens, good, bad. There's always going to be the naysayers. There's always going to be the haters, if you will, that are not going to like what we're doing. But in order to accomplish the big goals and the big visions and the big plans that we have to make those changes. And it's hard to see for some people, but in the grand scheme of things, we have to make those steps. And like we just talked about the trash last week, I guarantee you in a couple months, we're going to have people saying, oh, this was great. This is a great idea. I've had more phone calls about the trash and how much they love it. And now people are recycling, but you're always going to have your people that don't agree with it and don't like it. I'm okay with that. That's part of being here. We can't just sit. And as a Struthers resident, she can't just sit and just coast and just keep doing what we've been doing. We have to go and grow somewhere. And that comes with change.
Right.
And go ahead. One of the things that I've learned the most through this process too is, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And in this area, if you're only given option A, then that's the only thing you're going to go with, right? But so if we bring in, well, this is option A and here's option B and here's option C. Now, which is the best? You know, let's have a robust debate and conversation on those. But then at least we're given another choice, another opportunity. Like if we only ever look at this road and we've only ever looked at it for driving vehicles, we don't know the vision of what could exist for a bike lane and what that would mean. And even for me, watching this process has been, watching it while you're involved in it has been a phenomenal thing, because I'm learning just what the residents want and how we see ourselves and how we see our community by just having conversations within this planning structure. And I have to say, I've worked with a lot of mayors and Mayor Miller is tremendous. And, you know, she really could sit back and listen and learn and allow people to present different options and not just be like, no, we're going to do it this way because we've always done it this way. And that's what, I mean, Struthers is such a special city to me for a plethora of reasons, but I really think it has a wonderful opportunity to be this beacon of an example of what a deindustrialized city could be moving forward.
And how do you guys choose like the communities to emulate that are in a close enough situation that we are to kind of like follow what they've done?
Can I take that one? I'm going to answer that question real quick and then sure. You can follow up. We look to other cities to get ideas, but Struthers is so unique and we have such a different type of environment, not just our downtown, our schools, Youngstown Pullen Road, all of our different business areas, our people. We are not like normal cities. It's hard to replicate or match or do anything other cities are doing. We're going to be our own. So while I like to get ideas and like to hear things and learn things, we're going to do what's best for our city. And it's going to be unique. It's not going to be like any other city. And we really never have been.
And I was just going to add the engagement piece. Samantha, nobody pushes in a community engagement piece more than, you know, Samantha, and ensuring that the residents also have the residents' council. Everybody has the proper say in it. And explaining, you know, I think it'd be interesting for you right now to explain why that residential buy-in is so important. Because if you plan for things that you think you need, without engaging the residents, they're not going to use what you plan for. So I don't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you always want to hear from the community for what you're planning, because, you know, you could think you're doing all the greatest things in the world, but if you don't have that residential buy-in, and I'm talking like that emotional buy-in, then you might as well waste money elsewhere, right? So, I mean, we could put a park somewhere, for example, but if it's not something that the residents are going to use, then it doesn't really have the kind of benefits that it could otherwise. But there's so many reasons for community engagement. I mean, one, residents are the experts of their own communities. Like, even just as a planner, like, you can't begin to look at a map and look at data and know what you have to do. You just can't. I mean, you really need that. You need that qualitative analysis and that qualitative data collection that says, like, you know, in this spot, I feel unsafe. In this spot, I tend to park my bike. I mean, like, those are the kinds of, that's the kind of data you need to realize what kind of projects and strategies that you're going to implement in a community. And I mean, furthermore, engaging the community along the way, that creates such an invaluable buy-in, even for, you know, to push like the mayor's agenda. So if we have 1,000 people that are saying, hey, there's a flooding issue here. And they're marking in a location based on a map. That's far more important than us telling them, hey, there's a flooding, you know, there's a flooding issue here. Now we're going to do something about it. Like, you want to know that everything you're doing is coming from within the community, is supported by the community, and will serve the community going ahead.
Now, do you do that by focus groups? So the data that you get, that's not just like the people that complain end up getting noted, but yeah, people who don't, so, aren't part of that.
Yeah. So that's actually, you know, the conversations we've been having with the city so far. There was a bit of uncertainty around the value of community engagement software. So typically what might happen in a planning engagement process is having roundtable discussions or, you know, community planning focus meetings. And then you get the same people coming all the time. It's usually a handful of people that they call, right, the squeakiest wheels.
Right.
And then they kind of dictate the whole planning process. So we're looking, so our community engagement, that's our second phase, is beginning in October. So we're looking at different strategies. And one of them is to actually use a community engagement software where people who don't typically feel comfortable going to public meetings will feel comfortable sharing how they feel and sharing, you know, what's the most important aspects to planning the city to them. And we'll be able to share feedback and very like instantaneously as well without any hesitation. A lot of people don't want to stand up in a meeting and say like, I want this, or I don't like this, or I love that. Because then you have all these other people looking at you. They're like, oh yeah, you like that? Well, this is why we don't like it. So it kind of, you know, it's using a tool called heat mapping, so where people could drop a pin and say how they feel and, you know, kind of attach an emotion to it, will be really valuable for the city of Struthers plan going forward. And then, of course, you have populations that aren't comfortable engaging online. That's typically like your older populations, right, which will make an effort to go out and meet with. So we're going to offer a variety of engagement efforts for different populations. So like the school population, you know, working with the teachers will be probably most beneficial. Maybe they could throw something in their day-to-day learning that we could collect, even if that's, hey, draw a picture of your favorite place in Struthers, or draw a picture of like your dream park, right? So there's different ways to engage, but you really have to offer a plethora of ways to engage if you want to get that like top-notch engagement.
All right. So now as the mayor, you collect all of this data from the citizens and you get new ideas. I mean, are you crafting the long-term plan based on that feedback, or how much of it is the idealism of how you ran when, you know, and promised the constituents?
It's going to be, I think, a combination of all of that. So Okay. It's going to be what we feel as an administration is the best route to go as council. But we do, like she said, and you know, every time I come here, I talk about bringing more people to the table, asking more people for their input. We want everybody to feel like a part of the city. So going out and talking with residents and getting their feedback and asking them all these questions, we really want that. We really need that in order to be a successful city. But yeah, we want, I would say a combination of that.
And ensuring it's financially feasible too. You know, you get some really good feedback from residents that, you know, want to put in an amusement park, and that might just not work in our downtown.
That'd be amazing.
You know, our downtown.
Hey, never
footprint.
Say never.
That's true. But
it's important to note also, though, so all the feedback will be incorporated in the plan, but then a plan presents different phases, right? So you have short term, midterm, long term. Mm-hmm. Someone wants an amusement park, that could be on the long term. Hey, if there's ever any money from federally to put in amusement parks, now we have our plan.
Yeah, or make a carnival first and make it a bigger carnival,
exactly,
until you get to an amusement park.
And as insane as that sounds to me, you know how I am with the ideas. We come up with crazy ideas.
Yes.
People bring ideas to us, and our theory has always been, why not? Why can't we do this in Struthers? Why can't it happen? And these two women with the company have really embraced me in a lot of the craziness that goes on in day-to-day life. And they never, whereas I'll tell my husband something and he'll laugh and be like, okay, Kat, okay, and just kind of rolls his eyes. These two, every time we're at the table, they will really try to figure out a way to make it happen, or a way to explain to me why it can happen or why it can't happen, and really kind of ground us. But it's been wonderful work.
So the sexiness of dreamers like this, does it make your jobs easier or harder? I mean, more instead of traditional easy stuff, slow hanging fruit.
It makes it so much more exciting.
Does it?
I mean, working with Mary Miller has been a breath of fresh air because first off, I didn't think I would be staying back in this area. Then I met Kristen and, you know, started working on these projects together. But yeah, working with Mary Miller, I mean, I feel like she's a breath of fresh air for this whole area, quite honestly. I mean, it's been amazing. And just being able to formulate ideas with these two. And, you know, every time she brings an idea, like, I feel like we all could be like, yeah, and this is what would make it better, right? And it's, yeah, and I mean.
Now I'm going to take the controversial answer to that.
Okay.
I think it's both because then from a, you know, from a funding capacity and from my vision, like, you know, what's feasible to get funded is where I come in. Like what's, and how do we have to set it up in phases and this calendar year? And, you know, obviously, Mayor Miller, her administration, they want it now. Like they want to go as fast as humanly possible. And
are you the bad cop? Is that
yes,
what we're
yes,
saying?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, I am yes. Like, well, but we need to get it funded and this is the funding timeline. So, I mean, and I'm a little bit less of a, I might not have as good of an imagination as both Kat and Samantha do. Mine is a little more like, hey, but we can't get it funded unless we have this in it. But it's amazingly fun, but it's not that it's, this is also very hard work too. There's not, you know, you're dealing with everybody in the United States is recovering from the recession. Mm-hmm. That all this funding is very competitive. That's why a compelling plan is so critical and saying like, no, we have this, we're ready to go. The city supports this because you need a lot of these, you know, ducks in a row before mm-hmm. you're going to get any of these federal or state funding. So I have to like kind of look at like, I always say like, yeah, we can make that happen, but we're going to need more time.
Yeah.
I can't have that done, you know, by next year. It's going to take a couple more years. Well, it's just
for a lot of reasons. Part of that with the comprehensive plan, I think a lot of the approach in a lot of places has always been, oh, here's this grant opportunity. What are we going to apply for? What are we going to use this money for? What could come up with a program, create a something that we can use this money for. And this plan will help us be able to say, no, this is what we're using this for. This is almost like a timeline of when we get to this certain time of the grant opening, this is what we're applying for. So more of a set, we're ready to go when it's available.
Yeah, you always want to have a plan and then grants to follow, right? And it's the same with engineering. You want to have a plan and then you can get an engineer to make it happen. This area does it in reverse though. So, I mean, the area is engineered. It's not planned, right? It's why we keep seeing water and water lanes. And it's why we keep seeing like, yeah, you know, people or jurisdictions going after funding opportunities that don't align with any kind of plan. And don't really.
Well, if you kind of see other communities that like in the 80s and 90s, convocation centers, every community, they were getting grants and funding for it. And whether or not you needed one, they were pursuing it just because you could get those jobs.
Exactly.
Now, do you see that happening in other areas where, you know, like the funding is pro something, but you don't know if your community even wants something like that?
I mean, I see that from a grant perspective, you see this dollar chase that is like, well, wait a minute. Like, yes, this grant's, you know, it's this, hey, this grant's available. We need to go after it. Well, do we have a project that fits what that grant's asking for? This plan where we want it to be a different too, is we're going to layer in, okay, this is what we came up with. This is what we want. Here's the funding sources to get this done. Here's when they're due. Here's when they come about annually. Here's what year we're going to apply. So you really could see potentially like a 10-year solid strategy is this is how we're cycling this in. And no elected official wants to hear that. 10 years? No, we need to go now. Like, but
terms two.
Yeah,
I mean, come on,
exactly. But to do this properly and correctly, and that's always been my thing with the City of Struthers administration right now, is they want to do this so that it lays the foundation for the next 50 years of our city and for our residents to have that, you know, that solid ground of a permanent tax base where you have the income coming in because here's your industries, here's what you're doing now for the next generation. That's what this plan is. And it's like that planting that tree that you're never going to sit under the shade. Part of that is there's a reality that this work we do is going to benefit, you know, generations to come. And that's hard, again, an elected official. Not what? It's now. We have to serve the people now, which we are. but the long-term effects of this is just going to be tremendous.
Well, especially if those projects go multiple terms, that if you've got buy-in from the community and yourself, and it's a complicated thing, somebody comes in there later on and says, I don't like your idea, and it falls apart. I mean, that would be not great, right?
Not great. That's why I'm trying to be here for as long as I can.
Okay. All right.
I don't go anywhere. So, well, hopefully.
The important thing to note about a plan, though, is, right, it's created by the community. It's adopted by the council. So it is actually a document that's adopted. So, I mean, if you have a mayor that comes in later and is like, no, we don't want this. And if it's that updated plan that the community created, I mean, I don't know if that mayor would.
Well, the community has about a 30-second attention span. So things that take longer than a week to come together, they might forget why they started it in the first place.
That's honestly a good point. It really is. And that is actually the purpose of having continuous engagement. I'm not talking just like, hey, let's create this document. Now, bye. It's like, no, you want continuous engagement with the community. Hey, here's what you wanted. Now we're a year later. Here's what we did. But you want that on a continuous basis. Like, hey, you know what we're applying for this week? Or you know what kind of grant we got? It's for this project that we have laid out in the plan. Like, keeping people on board is really, really important to getting things done in the city. Like, you don't want to lose that momentum. I mean, so there's ways to do that in, like, creating kind of like a brand around the planning effort is one way, right? And Mayor Miller has a pretty active social following. So,
did you have any idea it'd be so much marketing in this position? I mean, it's a lot of telling stories, right?
It is, but I'm used to it. I'm getting more used to it too.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's exciting. I mean, yeah, it's an exciting time.
All right. So as part of this longer term plan, do you have anything that's taken some shape that we can talk about, you know, some longer term plans that are starting to come together?
Yeah. So in the comprehensive plan, that we have four different stages. So we are getting ready to wrap up our first stage, which is our existing conditions. And these women have been working on this for a very long time. We worked with YNDC. We had them come out and do some surveying. We have all that data to analyze, but we really have never had anything to say, this is what we have here in Struthers. This is, as a collective group, can we go after grants for housing? Can we go after grants for demo? Can we go after all these grants? Because we don't know what we have. So we have businesses in and out of Struthers that we don't even know are there. So we're doing a business survey to find out how they feel about parking, how they feel about their safe space, how they feel about their roads. So we're really working with how to get all the data together to show what we have to offer in Struthers, our existing conditions. And then we're going to move on to community engagement. But if you want to talk about existing, no, I don't want to talk about but the existing conditions part of it, what we've done so far.
Yeah. Like Mayor Miller said, it's a lot of data collection, but I'm actually not going to wrap up that phase until we start community engagement, because, to me, part of the existing conditions is hearing from the community. Because if there's, I mean, just even hearing like, okay, what common routes are people traveling? Where do people feel, you know, we need like better intersection infrastructure? Where do people feel we need more parking? And, you know, I mean, that's all part of it too. So it's really just getting the lay of the land. This is a picture of Struthers right now. This is what's happening. And I laugh about the parking, because this is not unique to Struthers or even this area, but parking is probably the biggest point of contention in the planning process. I mean,
I've saw fisticuffs. I mean, we were down at a meeting down here in downtown Youngstown, and people get really out of sorts when it comes to parking.
I mean, so here's the thing, right? So all we keep hearing about downtown is we need more parking. I mean, I've went now and created, like on Google Earth, literally have outlined and highlighted all the parking, and it's like, no, our whole town is parking. There's a lot of parking spots. So part of that existing conditions is taking an audit of how many parking spots are there, and also what is the capacity and what's the occupancy rate of those parking spots during these businesses' peak hours. So still waiting to get some business surveys back about what time are people's peak hours, so we can really, you know, hone in and have that data presented. It's interesting. I would say parking is definitely it's like that hot button topic, right?
Is it just like urban parking, or is it parking in general?
Well, it's parking in general. I mean, our cities have been created now since the 50s to cater to the automobile, right? So people can't imagine, and again, this is not unique to here, but a situation where let's say like customers and patrons and clients would arrive to their businesses not in a car. So especially in a lot of proper cities, people actually have like wild misperceptions about how people actually do arrive to their businesses. And there's actually more people walking and biking than they would actually expect. So that's always an interesting topic too. But, you know, like in downtown Struthers, I don't know if you're familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of parking, and, you know, probably what the city needs is just a parking strategy so that we could better use the parking. Because if you have 10 lots in downtown Struthers, like 10 big lots, let's just say an example, and one business has a full lot during their peak, but then all the other nine are vacant. Well, then you could come up with a strategy. How can we use parking together? Because if every business comes thinking they need their own parking lot, that's when you get more suburban type development.
Right.
And if people want a walkable downtown with thriving commercial activity, thriving public life, they want to see people walking, they want to see people biking, you're not going to walk and you're not going to bike and you're not going to hang out in a parking lot. So from a planning perspective, every square foot that's dedicated to the vehicle and every square foot that's dedicated to parking is taking space away from people. So the way I come about this is a very, very people-centered approach to planning. Like, what can we do? How do people want to feel downtown? What do they want to experience? What do they want to hear and see and smell? Like, what kind of shops do they want to walk into? And that's when you could really start helping people to envision what's possible. Because right now, all we hear is parking. Yeah. We want to put a parking lot there. We want to buy this land and demo that building to put a parking lot. It's like, no, I mean, no, right? That's why the suburbs are what the suburbs are today. And right now, I mean, with climate change, like that's a very real reality. Cities all around the world have to figure out how are we going to become more client resilient. A lot of that is in encouraging walking and encouraging biking and taking space away from parking for more greenery and more. So like when you have parking lots and you have cars, that contributes to an urban heat island effect, right? And with these extreme weather events where you have like extreme heat, that's very, very uncomfortable and also like very could be deathly for a lot of populations. Like let's look at what just happened in the Pacific Northwest, known to have pretty mild climates. They just had an extreme heat event where they lost a lot of people. So really thinking about resilience in terms of economic resilience, climate resilience, and social resilience, and tying that all into one plan, you know, parking is just not a big part of that equation. And when you have more different uses, like people adapt, behaviors change, you have healthier cities, you know, and the people fight for those changes. Like, let's think about what happened in New York City when they took out the traffic lanes from Times Square. There was so much opposition, and now people fight for that plaza, right?
Absolutely.
So it's...
And I would add from, you know, obviously the mayor's perspective also is then ensuring that all the residents and the businesses downtown are happy.
Yes.
So I come in and you know...
Idiot.
Yes, not counter Sam and Samantha and be like, well, we have to still make sure that there's ample handicap space and taking in those considerations. And then a tangible thing from this first phase to tie in the funding is that we also know what's potentially going to be eligible for the demo lists.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That means we'll be able to seek grant funds, federal and state dollars, to demo some residential houses that potentially need demolished, and then look if there's any commercial opportunities to apply for funding to take down any of the commercial buildings that may be unsafe, just not usable and not feasible to keep, you know, because they'd just be too cost prohibitive to save. We don't want to do that. The mayor is very much and her administration on board with saving as many of the downtown structures, buildings that are possible. But if you get into a safety issue where they need to be condemned, that's a whole nother thing. Mm-hmm. But right now there's funding for that. And if we don't have these places identified and into a plan, you're not going to get that funding.
Exactly.
So we're very excited that we were able to, you know, basically do a downtown footprint of knowing where we're at with what might need demolished and what might not, and be able to seek funding for it.
I don't notice much unoccupied buildings down there. You got a pretty good occupancy rate in Struthers, right?
No. I would say the opposite.
Really?
We actually have a lot of buildings that are unoccupied. So our code enforcement director, Joe Rudzik, he's been working with a forensic structural engineer. They've actually been scheduling times to go into every single building, not just in downtown, but in all the corridors in the city, to give them an overall assessment or summary, if you will, of the building itself. There were a couple buildings we found that don't necessarily need to be demoed and can be saved, but the amount of money that would have to be put into some of these buildings, it's cheaper to just demo and build new.
Right.
Now, obviously, like Kristen said, we do not want to destroy our history or get rid of anything like that. If it's something we can save, we have every intention of doing so. But really getting a collective assessment on what we have in the city and what buildings need to be rehabbed and trying to really find the right owners and the right people to purchase these buildings that intend to either fix them up or get the right businesses in there that will match and fit. So not really to compete with some of the cornerstones of our downtown, like Don Abito's and Sela's, but to really be something that would benefit the rest of the downtown area. So we're trying to do that too with our code enforcement director.
So Jay Williams did a bunch of land banking when he was real successful at doing that. I mean, is that something worth emulating? Is that still something, a viable model?
So we actually have a Struthers land bank that we've never really utilized. So we've pulled a lot of that legislation in to find out how we use it. And we can operate just like the Mahoning County Land Bank, but we just have never done it in the past.
Okay.
So I know we have a very, very aggressive code enforcement director. He's one of those ones, he wants to see it done now, as we all do. And we've really been utilizing that. We've been working great with the land bank, with Deb Flora. We had a meeting with her last week, I believe, because we have a lot to learn. So a lot of those conversations and those meetings are very informational for us, and we have to sit there and just take in and really learn the process of things because we've never really utilized it. So we have a couple properties in our land bank already that we are able to, instead of us just cutting the grass and cutting the grass and cutting the grass, we're able to bring those properties into our land bank and either try to bring somebody in to build new homes or to sell to the neighbors to take that off of our list of grass cutting for our street department. So we're really trying to utilize the land that we have there and not just let it sit there and just.
Now, when you reclaim it, do you demo it and get it prepared for a developer, or is it stay structure the way it is?
It depends. If it's a vacant land, then we will obviously try to get it into the hands of a neighbor.
Right.
Or if we can bring someone in who wants to build some kind of model home, that's what we're looking at too. But if it's a structure, if it's something that needs to be demoed, obviously we'll do that. But if it's something that we can save, we're looking at people to come in and say, hey, purchase this, fix it up, flip it, do whatever you need to do. But one of the things we talked about is that we want to make sure those structures are owner occupied. So we don't want to have people coming in and
scooping them all up
and scooping them all up,
living in Florida
and Florida and California, buying them, not taking care of them. And then when we have issues, we can't get a hold of anybody and it just becomes a huge headache for the city. So we want to make sure that those are owner occupied.
Now that some of the, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Well, I was just going to say everything about the plan is that, you know, we want that city of Struthers pride. We want you to live here, work here, send your children to school here. And, you know, that's why that the, you know, we want you to be invested in having, we have a very pretty good housing stock. Actually, we just did a wonderful with the YNDC survey. We found our housing stock in Struthers is pretty darn good. So we want you to come in and buy these homes and live here and raise your family here. And then we want to give you opportunities to work here. So I was just that, I just wanted to make sure, you know, I added that piece in that it really is about, you know, making Struthers a very, you know, exciting place to be.
So in Girard, there was a lot of complaints about those people that were out of state buying up properties and then running up the rents so that it was the cost of living went sky high. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that all mayors are kind of combating that. So how do you put that in a way that you do open it more so to local buyers than out of state buyers? Do you make it like harder to find the sales? Like how would you do that?
I just learned a word last week, a moratorium.
Okay.
Am I saying that correctly?
Moratorium.
That we will be discussing if that's something that we can do to kind of put a hold on people purchasing property and leasing it or renting it. But that was a problem that was recognized before my time. So council already had legislation that was going to be enacted. I believe it happened after I was there, which is why we have our landlord registration. So we're really trying to take care of those properties especially. But we do have a lot of good landlords. We have a lot of great landlords. We have a lot of people who live in Struthers, own homes, rent the homes in Struthers. And a lot of times we don't have any issues. We don't have any problems. Our houses are very well kept up. But it's the landowners when they live in different states and far away and we can't get a hold of anybody. So when we do have issues, it becomes a bigger problem and it becomes a very long, drawn out process. So something that we could just call one of our residents and say, hey, we have an issue at this house. Can you take care of it? And it's done. We now have to send certified letters and wait for how many months and it just becomes such a time consuming process to try to help.
To your question, sure. A local example. So Youngstown Neighborhood Development Corporation, the organization that did the land survey for us to find vacancies and potential code violations. So an example to promote, I think your question was like, how do you promote home ownership? Yeah, local buying. So when they rehab a house, they'll help with down payment assistance. So they could help up to 10% of down payment assistance. But then in exchange, so let's say like you're entering into an agreement that you will occupy that house for 5 years. And that could look different in different situations. So if the city of Struthers use their land bank and they rehab the house, they could offer the same type of arrangement. Perhaps they would say 10 years, right? So it has to be owner occupied for 10 years. There's different tools that you could use, especially if you're the entity putting in the resources and the effort into rehabbing the house.
Okay, thank you.
There's a lot of opportunity for a public-private partnership there between the city, other nonprofits that are doing housing rehab, and then just what that could look like. I mean, I think we're going to keep the law director very busy because you could make a lot of changes to the code, and as long as it's within, looking at what Struthers could do for their own city code, as long as it's within, constitutional jurisdiction, doesn't conflict with the state of Ohio's constitution and the constitution of the United States, you have a lot of tools as a city, just the way cities are structured. So, that is part of the planning process. We're looking at that and providing some, advisement and, hey, you could change the code enforcement to do this, this, and this.
I think it's also important to note though, like it's the renter isn't the problem, right? It's literally just like the disrepair of the house, and it's the owner allowing the house to fall into disrepair. So it's not like you want to code out renters, but you just want to make sure that houses are up to code, because it's like that broken window theory. If you put a car in a neighborhood and the car has a broken window, then you see all kinds of other physical degradation happening around it, because it's very psychological. So you want people to feel like their neighborhood is well kept and people care about it. And there is a major sense of pride in the city of Struthers, no doubt. I mean, you see it, you feel it. I mean, look at the mayor. She grew up here, went to school here, right? And you and
well, thanks. You just gave two examples. You can't come up with anymore.
Well, I'm just saying right here on camera.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place to. It's just the thing, the beauty of Struthers too, is it's the perfect size city to really be able to be like, yeah, we can do some catalytic things.
Yeah.
Slight little changes here and there, you're going to see such a change, maybe easier than in a larger place. That's why I'm excited, because there's just so much opportunity to showcase, what the city has to offer, in a regional plan, we're still in a phenomenal place regionally. I mean, the Midwest and Lake to River between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, what we could look at for supply chain pipelines and new green manufacturing, and in conjunction with the things you're seeing in, Trumbull County, with the, the cars and the, looking at, batteries and the electric piece of the environmental and sustainability, Struthers could be a partner with that in other industries. There's just so much. We have such good infrastructure here. I got to get on my soapbox because I'm here. You're talking about the steel industry from Lake to River that manufactured and produced the steel that was transported globally. we can be that for the next generation of green manufacturing once we plan and lay out the proper footwork for what that looks like. You know, so excellent. Had to get in my little sales.
This was fun. I'm glad you brought these guys down here. It was a fun discussion. Any other parting words? Anybody have anything else want to throw out there before we go?
I actually want to make mention really quick that today is the 1 year anniversary from when Rowan Sweeney was killed. So if everyone could just hug their kids a little tighter tonight. I just wanted to acknowledge that today's the anniversary for that.
All right. Thank you guys for coming down. I appreciate it. And over the next couple of weeks, we got a couple of great guests lined up. We have Second Harvest Food Bank will be here in the coming weeks. And we also have Guy, CEO of the Regional Chamber of Commerce. So we'll see you next Tuesday. This has been the Influencer Show.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.